I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of plantyourself.com. Let's talk about cravings for a little bit. You ever crave food? You ever feel like you want some chocolate or ice cream or something crunchy and salty? And some part of you says, go for it. And some other part of you says, no, it's not good for you. The media is just trying to manipulate you to get you to want it. And so you treat it like this itch that you want to scratch, but you don't. Well, for me, cravings fall under a category of desires in general. And I have learned to trust my desires. And that's a funny thing to say. Was what if my desire is for a bacon double cheeseburger? Well, we live in a society in which there are marketers out there and there are financial interests in giving us the thing that will satisfy our desire, our craving in that moment. But not for a very long time and not very deeply. And we know this because the craving comes back, and it comes back stronger. The more you give in to a craving like that with the first thing available, the more likely you are to turn that into an addiction. And you're going to need more and more of it in more and more intensive doses to just get that same feeling. So that's not what we're talking about. When we talk about desires, maybe we can think of our cravings as clues, as little bits of plants sticking up out of the ground, pointing to some big root. You know, the leaves aren't going to fill you up, but the big tuber at the bottom probably will. Today's guest, Annie Oliverio, has done just that kind of detective work with her beautiful book, Crave, Eat, Heal. Rather than looking at food in terms of breakfasts, dinners, lunches, soups, desserts, she takes a marketer's view in terms of what do we feel like eating? And we think about the food we want to eat very often in terms of what we're craving. Well, what would feel good right now? I want some comfort food. I want something cold. I want something creamy. And instead of saying those desires are illegitimate and, you know, go eat 2 pounds of kale whenever you feel like chocolate, she says, let's acknowledge those cravings. Let's acknowledge them as valid, and let's see if we can fulfill them in ways that really satisfy us deeply, on a deeper level than just the taste of sugar on our tongue or fat in our belly. So if you've ever been confused, befuddled by your cravings, wondering what to do with them, how to respect them in ways that get you what you want, short-term and long-term, I think you'll really enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, Annie Oliverio, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, I have your cookbook in front of me. It is gorgeous, and it's unlike...
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's unlike any other cookbook I've ever seen in terms of structure and format. So we'll get into that. We'll talk a lot about Crave, Eat, Heal. I'm going to have a little bit of trouble going through the pictures without wanting to go run into the kitchen and make some of them.
Excellent. But my job has been done then.
Yeah. You've caused cravings. Congratulations.
Yes.
So I'd love to begin by just, you have a really interesting sort of work history. You're not a professional chef or nutritionist.
Correct.
How did you get into this way of cooking and eating? What's the story of your journey here?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a long journey. It's probably not dissimilar to other people who are sort of become aware of their health and interested in taking control of their health. And my journey really started by eliminating sugar, which I talk about in my book. I have a very unhealthy relationship with refined sugar and sweetness, and I have had since I was a kid. And I'm sure many people can relate to that. So I really decided that I had to go out of my diet. And that was from vanity. I'll just be honest with you about that. It wasn't a health choice at that time. Later, I learned more about the effects of sugar and especially its relationship to cancer. So that's how it started.
When you say vanity, you're talking about putting on a few pounds?
Correct. Yeah, I've always been thin. I never had to worry about, you know, I could sit down and eat a pint of ice cream and, you know, no biggie. But as I got older, that became less forgiving. My body became less forgiving. And, you know, I wanted to look good, honestly. And so that's where it started. And from one sort of health change, and you may be able to relate to this as well, when you start to feel better, you start seeking other ways to feel even better. And, you know, then I started reading and watching movies. Fast Food Nation is one of the first things that really got me thinking about our relationship to consuming animal products on many different levels. And that led to the China study and also Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, which all of those books are just very important to me and eye-opening. And I just slowly eliminated foods from my diet, and red meat and chicken went, and then finally fish and seafood and all dairy. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm curious because, you know, this is... It's interesting how for each of us, our journey, there feels like there's some sort of logic and inevitability to it as
yeah.
we look back. But when I hear the story,
right.
I guess you're like in your 30s at this point, you're putting on a few pounds.
Right.
Like most people do something differently. They'll like pop a pill, have a shake, go
yeah.
to Weight Watchers.
Right.
Did you try any of that stuff or did you go straight to the good stuff?
No. Yeah, I never did that, and I can't really tell you why I never did it. I guess I just never believed it, and that may be because I benefited from the experiences of people around me who did go that route, and all I saw were people who were eating things that really didn't taste good. They weren't getting to eat a lot of food, and so they were frustrated, and they might sort of lose some weight, and then... you know, they'd have a crash and burn. And it's just this horrible cycle that who wants to put your mind and your body through that? You know, I didn't. And so, no, I just never went that route. If I did anything to the extreme, it would be I wouldn't eat as much. You know, and I started running around that same time, too. So, you know, I just... those shakes and the meals, no.
Okay. So you gradually started eliminating things. You found Dr. Campbell's work and Dr. Esselstyn
yeah.
and various others. And you've written a book about cravings. So was that kind of
yeah.
the rubber band for you that was bringing you back to dangerous territory?
Well, initially, the book idea was about, and this goes back to my brother being diagnosed with terminal brain cancer, and me thinking along the lines, I'm sort of deep into that experience, and thinking along the lines of, okay, what can I put into my body that will help it fight disease? And can I write a cookbook about it? Well, I'm not an expert. You know, I didn't feel comfortable taking on that kind of monumental task. And it's been done. But I did think about the way that I think about food often, and a lot of people think about food, which is, what do I feel like eating? You know, what, maybe it doesn't matter what time of day it is. What is my body craving? And can I satisfy those cravings in a way that is beneficial to my body and maybe also addresses an emotional need or, you know, some other need, you know, without doing a lot of harm?
So you organized the book in a unique way. I've never seen any other book like it, where instead of the chapters being like lunch, soups, appetizers, right, dessert, chapter one is craving one is carbs, and then chocolate, comfort, cool. So it's even alphabetical. You can find your craving.
Yeah, I'm obsessive. Yeah.
So, where'd you get the idea for indexing it by craving as opposed to type of dish?
Yeah. Well, a couple of things. I just like that idea of, how many times have you said to somebody, hey, what do you feel like eating tonight? You know, and you might say, Indian food sounds good, or, you know, whatever it may be. And I thought it was an interesting way to approach organizing a cookbook instead of being sort of bound to this traditional idea of, well, I've got to start with appetizers and then I've got to move into soups and then salads, and which is, you know, great. You got to organize a cookbook somehow. But this just was interesting to me. And I do like to do things a little bit differently. That helped. And luckily my publisher was happy with that idea as well. So it's just kind of a way of thinking about food and what you want to eat.
Hmm. Well, it reminds me, you know, I've had a career in marketing, and so very many times in you know, a business will start with its product and then try to figure out, well, how do we talk about the product? How do we get people interested in the product? My approach was always to talk about the people. To talk about their needs, their lives, their problems, their desires. And then once they're interested in that, tie it into the product if there's a fit. And this feels like it's a very, you know, eater-centric approach. Like that question, what do I feel like? Boy, I'd love something crunchy. You know, but you know, you know, we don't go to the restaurant and say, I would like something crunchy.
Right. You might not say it, but you're thinking it.
So this, I mean, it's a great, you know, it's a great taxonomy of cravings. I'm curious, like, did you sit around with a whiteboard or do you call all your friends and say, and, you know, how did you come up with the list? And did you feel exhaustive?
No. Well, see, that's the thing. That's what sort of worried me. I did just sit down and think about it. And it, you know, it took me a couple of days to kind of, I think there's 13 or something, unlucky 13. There are probably others. You know, I didn't put umami in there, you know, which I'm not sure I could have come up with enough recipes. But yeah, so there's probably others that are, you know, I haven't identified. Nobody suggested anymore, though, I have to say. Maybe you can come up with some and we'll have a crazy heel too. And
that's right. We'll see. It'll be a vegan chicken soup for the soul. They'll have a whole series.
The whole series. Yeah, till everyone's really sick of me. But yeah, that's how I did it. I just sat down and started writing.
Well, I guess the other interesting way to do this, and you mentioned, you know, kind of emotional issues.
Yeah.
Is what if you like did it by emotion? And I wonder if you've ever like mapped different emotions onto cravings. Like, when would you want something spicy?
Right.
When would you want something comforting?
Right. Well, you know, yeah, I think there is a connection there. Certainly for myself. Yeah, there's certain times when I definitely want chocolate, you know, and definitely have salty cravings. I mean, you know, people sort of vacillate between one or another. But yeah, I think that's possible. Yeah.
So how do you define a craving, and how do you think about it? Is it something positive, negative, neutral, controllable?
Yeah.
What's the relationship between you and us and craving?
All of the above. I would say I can personally identify cravings more often than not to an emotional need or experience, something that's not related to hunger. And I would say that in my past, cravings were definitely something that were not good and not healthy. Now I have less cravings. I guess that's fair to say. And I don't crave sweets as much as I used to. But I think they can be healthy, and I think they can let you know when you need something, and maybe you're not listening to yourself, you're not hearing yourself, and this is a way for your body to say, hey, I'm trying to talk to you, and you're not listening to me. Does that make sense?
Meaning that it comes out as a craving, but it really says something like, You need sweetness in your life. You need love. You need self-care.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever that may be. Maybe you're not getting enough sleep, or maybe you're depressed about something, or whatever it may be. And that's maybe the body's way of demanding attention.
So given that, I guess one of the questions I emailed you that I was thinking about is like, I ask this because this is a discussion I have with myself a lot, which is, I've learned how to cook a lot of healthy food, and I've never, articulated it or developed it nearly to the point you have. But I have, my go-to recipes when I want something cold, or, something ice creamy or chocolatey.
Right.
And the question I'm asking myself as I'm preparing and eating those foods is, should I be working on my demons? Is it some sort of shortcut or cop out? What's your take on that?
That's a tough one. For me personally, well, there's a couple of things. I'm not a huge deep thinker. I know myself very well. And for me, if I need to do that kind of thinking, I do it better if I'm running or taking a walk. I don't think that's the issue for me, but I can certainly see that would be, kind of a panacea for other people. Let me just shut off everything. The things that are disturbing. You can talk about addiction that way, right? I mean, that's why some people have an addiction to alcohol or drugs. It's a way of putting off dealing with something that is maybe unpleasant. But I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
wow, I'm going to prepare my lunch for the whole different attitude today. But
oh, no, I got to go for a run. Get me out of your head before you go back to lunch.
Yeah.
But certainly, it's a complicated feedback loop, the sugar, fat, salt, artificial ingredients, processed foods, are certainly far from neutral. You could say that.
So
at least these foods, if we're giving in to cravings, at least the ingredients themselves as presented in Eat, Crave, Heal are certainly not going to do you any harm. And a lot of them are going to do you quite a bit of good. You've got great ingredients in here, lots of fruits and herbs and spices. There's a way, I think, in which if you're just binging on sugar, you're making things worse.
You're making things a lot worse. Yeah. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I think one of the things that I do kind of fall prey to is an idea of food as a reward. That was a tough day. I'm going to reward myself with whatever. or I had a really great workout, you know. And that can be a little, you got to be a little bit careful there because, you know, you are making, as you say, this sort of feedback loop, this connection between doing something that you perceive as good and then rewarding yourself for it. But again, as you say, I could reach for a bag of Doritos or, you know, I could make some chocolate chia pudding, you know, instead.
Right. And one of the things I noticed about a lot of your recipes is that there's a trend in sort of, you know, vegan and plant-based cookbooks to make things easier and easier and easier. And
yeah, right.
It feels like you don't go there. That, you know, that most of the recipes as I'm leafing through have, you know, a minimum of 6, and some of them have like 15 different ingredients. There's something sort of very perversely satisfying to me about I've got this craving and my two choices are to like rip open a bag of chocolate chips, like the only chocolate I have in the house, which is, you know, it's an ingredient, but it's really a food.
Right.
Spend half an hour, you know, actually putting some care and attention and love and consciousness into this dish. Did you do that on purpose to make them a little bit elaborate?
Well, first of all, I'm glad you noticed that. And I have a couple of things to say about that, which one is I have kind of a unique situation in that I, unlike a lot of people who have very stressful and time-consuming careers, I can spend a lot of time in the kitchen. And I enjoy spending time in the kitchen. And so I think that's reflected in the recipes in my book. That's the way that I cook. And cooking oftentimes is therapy. So slowing down and being in the kitchen, thinking about what you're doing at that moment instead of thinking about what you have to do or, you know, whatever stresses were going on, you're sort of focused on that, those moments that you're preparing food. And as you say, what is more, you know, a better gesture of love and care could be for yourself or for yourself and your family than creating a meal that's delicious and also is healthful. So, you're totally right that the trend is how do I have 5 ingredients and put a meal on the table in 10 minutes? And obviously everybody needs those meals, but it's not really the way that I cook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, you know, those are a great, sort of skeleton, but you know, none of us wants to be a skeleton. This feeling like, well, so I may not, your cookbook may not be my sort of everyday playbook. But they're like, without this, like, you know, in a sense, as I look at the table of contents again, like this is all sort of optional, right? Mm-hmm. Giving into cravings, you know, having things that are crunchy, you know, like if we look at, you know, sort of paleo people, like, what would you like for dinner? You know, whatever I can find, dig up, catch, kill, macerate, you know, as opposed to, and this is to me, it's really about bringing something extra to food.
In a
sense that, you know, that the lowest denominator solution to our craving is just, you know, get in the car, go to the store, buy some crap by some company that couldn't care less about us.
Right. Who wants to get you addicted. Yeah.
And this is kind of the opposite. This is, okay, you've got this, it's almost like, as I thought about it more, for you, the craving is like an invitation to actual pleasure and not fake pleasure.
Wow, that's nice. Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. I think we lose something and have lost something by relinquishing our role in the food. You know, where it comes from, who grew it. You know, preparing it, appreciating it. You know, this is amazing food that we have whenever we want it, and taking time with it. I mean, it's brainless to go to a fast food place or to pick up a prepared, something prepared at a store. But what have you lost? You know, it's a loss. And, you know, I think another thing that we have lost is sort of this, and something that I really treasure from my childhood and my youth is sitting down to a meal. You know, and a meal used to be a main dish, a couple of side dishes, maybe a salad. You know, it was kind of an event every dinner, certainly. And, you know, that's, I don't know, I think we lost a little bit of that, but maybe I'm digressing off of the topic, but
I don't think so. Cause I mean, I'm thinking about, like, there's things that I cook that, and I'm kind of outing myself here, that I'll sort of like eat from the pot with a wooden spoon.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
You know, I'll have like 7 or 8 chunks of it, and I'm like, okay, well, good. Now I can go back to what I was doing.
Go back to what you're doing, right.
But there's nothing in this book that I would cook that I wouldn't want to like have a little ceremony around and kind of share it with people and slow things down.
Yeah. You know, yeah, like, I miss that, you know.
Remember a joke I heard about, you know, a guy goes to the bakery and he orders a cake with, you know, such and such color icing and this, you know, type of ruffle on the side and this, you know, 5 leafed roses, and it's got to be in the shape of a bee. And he comes back like 2 weeks later, it's ready, and he opens the box and his face falls. He says, "Oh no, I should have specified. It's got to be a lowercase b." It'll take another 2 weeks. And he comes back and he looks at it and it's perfect. And they said, "Well, what kind of ribbons would you like on it?" He says, "Oh no, I'll just eat it here."
Oh my gosh! Yeah, right.
You know, it's like that's such a thing in our culture. I'll just eat it here. You know, I have to get back to what I'm doing, and food is kind of this necessary distraction,
the fuel, or
So really, I think what I see in this book is really an attempt at elevation. To say, you know, it's almost like alchemical. Like we're going to start with this very, very base biological desire that we could fulfill, in the easiest way, but we're going to transmute it into something that provides health and awareness and consciousness.
Yeah.
So you started with a blog, right?
Yes.
And what's the name and URL of your blog?
It's anunrefinedvegan.com. So it's anunrefinedvegan.com. And I started that shortly after going vegan.
About what year was that?
Let's see, 2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you start out looking for readership or just kind of posting your own stuff?
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, I wasn't very savvy. I'm still not very savvy. I just thought, hey, I like to write. And I like to write recipes, so I'm just going to start this blog. And I didn't really do anything to attract readers. People, you know, they sort of find you somehow, and you know, it's grown very slowly from there. But I think I've improved over the years. I hope so. And you know, I constantly am meeting new people, and you know, it's a great way to build a community.
Yeah, I'm curious about how the community, how your readers and how their feedback and their stories influenced both your journey and this book.
Well, you know, let me think about that. One of the things that's been interesting to me, and this is a little bit, this is post-book, but right now I've got a lot of people reviewing my book. And one of the questions a lot of them are asking their readers are, well, what are your cravings? You know, what do you think about when you think about food? And that's been very interesting for me to read what sort of speaks to people's stomachs and how familiar a lot of those experiences are to my own experience. And I think that's probably the coolest thing about writing a blog and also, you know, sort of working on this book is the similarity of our experiences and, you know, the things that trip us up or the, you know, the accomplishments that, and I'm talking food wise and maybe diet wise and even plant-based eating wise, you know, what are the things that the issues that we've come across as plant-based eaters. And that's just a really nice, you don't feel like you're alone. And I live in Oklahoma and vegans are few and far between. So having this sort of online community has been really great.
So were you surprised that people were sort of echoing back similar stories to yours and similar relationships with food and similar cravings?
Yeah, you know, I think all of us, and probably not even just related to food, but in many experiences in our lives, we think, well, it's just us, you know, we must be kind of weird because that's the way we're feeling. Nobody else is. And I mean, it is incredible how similar, you know, conversations that people have had, relationships with family members and how, you know, comments that people have made, whatever, these experiences that people have had in relation to choosing to be vegan. And, you know, I've had them too. And it's nice to know you're not alone.
Is there a sense of relief that you hear from people? Because there's a narrative that once you go vegan, all your problems disappear. That you know, you drop your weight effortlessly. You stop thinking about food. You can eat as much as you want from this particular palette of ingredients. And the truth is, I know a lot of vegans who struggle, and a lot of whole food plant based people, who are assiduously avoiding vegan junk food, are still struggling with urges.
It is interesting, and I agree with that. It is not it's not a cure all, of course, and it's not going to fix any issues you have in your head, for sure. If you have a rocky relationship with food to begin with, you're still going to have a rocky relationship with food. I mean, you know, that's mental work. That's not work that food's going to fix. I mean, if you are a whole food plant-based eater and you avoid processed vegan food, you can still have a bad relationship with food. And what it, you know, again, going back to the idea of craving, what's that craving? You know, why? What is your head trying to tell you that you're not addressing? And again, that sort of goes back to what you were talking about, like, as you're preparing food, are you avoiding some other issue? So it's not gonna fix everybody for sure.
Well, I guess the word relationship jumps out for me. Like, there were times in my life where, you know, it doesn't matter who the woman was, I would have had a lousy relationship with her, not because of her.
Right,
because what I was bringing to it at that moment.
And
it's true with food. You could have the perfect table and still have all sorts of anxieties about it.
Right. Yeah. Hey, you can still overeat. You know, for me, one of the things I had to be careful about is I love nuts. I love peanuts. You know, peanuts are kind of my thing. And you can eat too many peanuts, let me tell you.
Yeah. I don't know if this is just me, but when I pull out the book and just sort of open it at random, more often than not, it opens up to the one recipe that has like a ton of coconut oil. The Sarah's Almond and Goji Berry Chocolate Bar.
Yes, I know, right? Yeah.
It's like, you know, there's like this halo effect. Well, it's in this book. I could just have this every day.
It's got to be great. Yeah. I when I did the photograph for that, I was like, I got to be really careful with these, you know. I made them, I put them immediately in the freezer, and it was, Yeah, I have to be pretty disciplined with stuff like that because, you know, it's, you know, if it's there, I'm going to eat it. And I have my rule. I mentioned in the book, sweets on days with an S, you know, Saturday and Sunday, I can have my sweet. You know, some people will be like, okay, Ann, you're completely compulsive, just relax. But I found that that's what works for me.
Yeah, well, that is relaxation, right? That means you can relax on Tuesday.
Yeah, right. Because there's an S in there.
which has an S, but...
Wednesday, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. Yeah. But yeah, those goji berry bars, yeah, pretty deadly. In a good way.
So you write that... when, you know, your relationship with food was basically, you know, I mean, it was kind of out of my diary a little bit, like the Twix bar and the Oreos. And...
Memory lane.
So how did you learn how to cook? Like when all that great junk food was available.
Who needs to learn how to cook, right? Mac and cheese and all that. Well, my mom and dad are both great cooks. And so I grew up in a house where we did a lot of cooking. I didn't do it at the time. You know, I was always sort of attached to my mom's hip, like, okay, I'm watching mom cook. But I didn't do a lot of cooking until I got out on my own. And not even post-college, I didn't do a lot of cooking then either. I guess when I got married, it was kind of like, okay, I gotta really learn how to cook, and that's, yeah. No, I like it. I like to cook, so it's okay. And I like to eat. You know, more importantly, I really like to eat. So, it wasn't under duress. Yeah, it was good. And yeah, I like cookbooks, and I like to learn by doing. So I guess it just kind of, you know, sort of made sense.
So what did you start out with cookbooks and then just decide I'm too confined here I'm very curious about people who kind of invent their own recipes. Cause I've never done that in my life except by accident.
Yeah.
And most of the time I wish I hadn't.
Yeah. Right.
What was the impetus to become original here?
Yeah. Well, I think my blog, really, because you kind of have to, you know, if you want to share vegan food and you're going to put it out there kind of in the public, even if hardly anybody but your mom is reading it, you kind of want to, you gotta start being original. It evolved over time. And I think the thing is, it's like anything else. The more you do it, the more you learn what ingredients go together and, you know, what works. And there's a lot of bad meals along the way. And that's why you have recipe testers. And they tell you when you need to, give up on a recipe. I think it's practice. Yeah.
Did you crowdsource recipe testing from your readership?
I did.
So
yeah.
What was that like?
I thought, okay, I'm going to ask people, I'm going to put myself out here and nobody is going to respond and I'm going to be really, really embarrassed. And people came out of the woodwork, you know, people who'd never left a comment or I didn't know, a lot of people I did know, but they were like, yeah, we want to help. And so that was gratifying. And then I created a private website and I put, you know, I would just post recipes up there as I created them and people make them, you know, it's just incredible that people do this. And by the way, I've done recipe testing for other authors. So I kind of have both experience on both sides, but you know, people, they buy the ingredients, they make the stuff and they tell you what they think. And some of it is a little ego bruising.
What was the worst comment you got that was actually helpful?
I can't remember specifically, but there was one person who didn't like anything. And that's really hard. But this is kind of in general what I learned it. So I can't, it wasn't a specific one person or one comment. And I actually mentioned this in my book, I apparently used too much vinegar. I liked sort of vinegary things, and I guess I overdo it in my recipes. I heard that a lot. And I also heard you don't use enough salt, and I'm not a big fan of salt. So those were the two criticisms. So I really had to listen to those, because, you know, hey, they're the ones, these are sort of representative of potential buyers of the cookbook, and I want people to like the recipe. So, yeah.
That's crazy. So crazy. Pick a recipe that was kind of a surprise favorite of people's that you thought, you know, maybe I'll like it, but kind of you got a much, you know, more popular reception than you would have guessed.
From the book?
Yeah.
Probably the carrot ginger turmeric steamer, which is, you know, this kind of crazy drink that doesn't seem like it should taste good, but it does. And it tastes good cold, and it tastes good warm. Yeah, that's the one that comes off the top of my head. I'm kind of waiting for people to try my buckwheat sausage. Apparently that's scary to people, but anyway, yeah. Yeah, the steamer.
Ooh, look at this.
Interesting.
Ginger, turmeric.
Yeah.
Ooh, these are great photos. Did you have to learn this? Did you put this stuff in a light box? Like, how do you do this? This is gorgeous stuff. I'm asking. I don't care if anyone else cares, but I'd like to know how to do this.
Thank you. Those are natural light photos, and you need a window, and you need a white board, and you need your food. And you just want all that light just flooding in. You want the camera to be in front of the light, and the food, you know, so it's camera, food, light behind all that. And the light comes in, and it's, it kind of makes this nice sort of ethereal, clean look, which is what I hope my food is. And so I wanted my food to kind of reflect that in the photos.
Yeah. So you have to learn how to do that?
Yes. Yes. I will not encourage people to look at the old photos on my blog, which were taken with a smartphone. And that's how I started. And I kind of realized after a year or so that some other people were really taking gorgeous photos on their blogs, and it made a big difference. And so that's another kind of thing. I started reading. I bought a better camera, and I just started playing around. And, yeah, it's all self-taught.
Very impressive.
So, thank you. Well, I've still got a lot to learn, but definitely an improvement from those early iPhone photo days. Okay. Hey, but that works, too. Some people get really great shots from their iPhone and from their smartphone, so I'm not going to.
Yeah,
I just couldn't.
I attended a vegan blogging conference. Like, one of the most popular breakout sessions was how to do food photography with your iPhone.
Right. Yeah, well, it makes sense. You have it handy. You know, who wants to spend a lot of time setting up the shot? You want to pull out your cell phone and take a picture. And, you know, I just got interested in taking the photos, so that's why I pursued it. But I know many bloggers who have big followings, and they take great photos, and they either use a point and shoot or they use their phone. So, hey, good for them.
So have you gotten feedback from your readership about health improvements, right? Not just like, oh, I love this dish, but wow, following you on this journey, here's what's happened. What sort of stories do you hear?
I don't. And I think that's because I don't really focus on that in my blog, and I don't really talk about, let's say, a personal journey or something of my own to health. I mean, I've made mention of it in posts, but that's not really a community that I've developed. So, I know other bloggers who have a lot of those kinds of stories, and they're fantastic. You know, it's great when people give you that kind of feedback.
Uh-huh. So what made you choose that title then? Because if it's mostly about, you know, mm-hmm. food, and I'm looking at the blog right now, these gorgeous pictures, and it's got a very of clean lifestyle aesthetic to it. But the book says heal. How did you choose that title?
The title of the blog?
Of the book.
The book.
Crave Eat Heal.
Crave Eat Heal. Well, first, the working title was Cravings That Heal. And again, I think it's a little bit heavy on, I didn't want to convey, hey, this book, if you follow the recipes in this book, you're going to be disease-free. But I still wanted to bring attention to the fact that there are foods that you can eat which will have positive health benefits. And again, a lot of that, I had to take it in context of when I wrote the book, which is was a very sad time for me and my family.
Because of your brother's brain cancer.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what I was thinking about during his 2-year battle was, what could I do? What could I get him to eat that would help him? I couldn't get him to change his diet. And, you know, it's certainly not something I wanted to force him to do, but that's where my head was. Like, what, and frankly, what do I do to prevent this from happening to me? You know, what can I eat? Because I have to eat. What can I eat that's going to actually do, it's going to help me, help my body's own defenses. So that's where the heal comes in. And you know, you can see certainly from your background, some of the ingredients are quote unquote superfoods. And, you know, so that's where all that comes from.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So in the book, you talk about A Little Help from My Friends, and you actually include quite a few other bloggers' recipes. It's like 15 or 20 of them. You kind of celebrate them in the book. You tell funny little stories about them and give links. What has the vegan blogging community been like for you?
It's a warm, for the most part, it's a warm place where people do, as you say, want to celebrate not only veganism and plant-based eating, but also each other. And over the years, I just developed relationships with particular people. And I wanted to say to them, thank you. And I respect what you do. And hey, I've got a cookbook. You want to do it with me kind of thing, you know, because why not? You know, when you have something to celebrate, you want to invite the people who mean something to you. And that's why I did that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So are there tensions in that community between sort of ethical vegans and health vegans? Did you kind of include both camps?
Yeah. For sure. Unfortunately, there are those kind of ridiculous tensions and, I luckily have avoided a lot of that. I have had a couple of comments. I consider myself a plant-based vegan. I switched mainly for health. So yeah, some people had an issue with that, but I'm sorry that you had the second part of your question. I got totally distracted, but yeah, I do include, both ethical vegans and plant-based vegans in the cookbook. So there's definitely a mix, and I've never, you know, we all support each other in that group. So no issues there.
Awesome. So what's an ingredient that you feel is underappreciated that you have come to love and rely on?
Wow. I'm trying to think of what I use over and over again. I don't know. I guess one thing that I always sort of point to is liquid aminos, but probably those are very appreciated. I don't know how you feel about them, but I use them all the time.
So what? So you're talking about like Bragg's liquid aminos,
right?
So what's the difference between them and like a good soy sauce in the way you use
Yeah. There's a subtle flavor difference, and I like the Bragg's when I want something that has a little bit more of a smoky flavor. I'll use that, and I also find it's just a nice finish to a soup or something, a stew, and you don't want to add salt, but you want to add just kind of a little bit of saltiness, I guess. For soy sauce, you know, sometimes I use them interchangeably, but the Bragg's just has a, I don't know, maybe a little bit more complex flavor, I think. Yeah.
Gotcha. So I'm on the blog now, and it looks like you've posted a whole bunch of recipes since the book came out.
Yes.
So so how much what is your like blogging cooking day look like? How many hours a week does it take you to keep coming up with new stuff, posting it? I'm sure you cook stuff and you go, you know what, this is not blog worthy. It's, you know,
right,
feed it to the dog. And like, what is that like to kind of keep up with this level of invention and promotion?
Yeah, it's interesting that you asked me that question, because that's I've been doing a lot of soul searching on that. I actually pared down, obviously, when I started writing the book, I had to pare down what I was doing for the blog. I wanted to stay connected, but I also knew that most of my creative juice had to go to the book. And by the time I finished that, I decided that I needed to not spend so much time on my blog, but to make make it better quality what I was sharing, but less. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to go to once a week posting. I was doing 3 times a week, which is absolutely insane. And that's helped me so much, because I don't feel that pressure. I still feel some self-induced pressure, but I don't have quite the same amount of pressure, and I can spend a little bit more time with recipes. And the cookbook really taught me that, hey, take your time, slow down. The recipe's probably not going to come out right the first time, and you're going to end up with something better. So that was a good lesson for me. And that's how I've focused now on the blog, is once a week, a good quality recipe that I'm proud of, happy with, and stellar photos. Mm-hmm. But it is immensely time consuming, no matter what. And you can probably attest to that too. You have your own site. And it's not just writing the content for that particular post, or writing a recipe or taking the photos. It's everything that goes with it behind the scenes, which is, you know, the sort of the social media and self-promotion, which I absolutely loathe. And
well, you have a lot of friends who are doing it for you, because I didn't find you because of you. I found you because of Kathy Hester.
I know. Gosh, Kathy Hester is so wonderful. Yeah, she's been such a great friend, and she's so good at sharing and helping other authors and bloggers. So yeah, Kathy's incredible. So yeah, I hate it, and I do it, but I hate it. You know, I was sort of raised to not talk about myself, and here I am spending an hour with you talking about myself. But yeah.
Oh, but I'm pulling it out of you. You know, with a
right
with dental tools.
Tooth and nail. Yeah, so it's absolute torture.
So you're still being polite about it.
Well, my mother also told me, be polite. But anyway, yeah, so it's hugely time consuming, but I guess I wouldn't do it if I didn't like it, right?
Is this your sort of hobby or second job, or with the cookbook and the blog, has it become, you know, a means of support?
I'm not quite there yet, but interestingly, it's led to food photography jobs for me. So I've done photos for several cookbooks, including one for Kathy Hester, which is coming out soon. So that, I can see that becoming more of, you know, a sort of money-generating end of it, which makes me a little bit happier because that really isn't about pushing myself. And I can be a little bit more behind the scenes, which I'm kind of more comfortable with anyway. So the blog doesn't generate income, and I've actually removed all ads from my blog, and I used to have them, and I decided that I don't want them on there anymore. So I'm not even pretending that my blog is a money-making
Why did you remove the ads?
Because I started getting annoyed by ads on other blogs. you know, you go to a blog and, the whole sidebar is, and you know, I'm not trying to criticize anybody. Hey, everybody's got to do things the way that is comfortable to them. And if they want to make some money, God love them. But for me, I just found it to be intrusive on what I was sharing. You know, my photos look better without ads next to them, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think that, I think the key learning there is, you know, if you're comfortable with ads when you go to other people's sites, then have ads. But be in integrity. Like, don't have a blog that you're, you know, ashamed to show your friends from middle school.
Right. Right. And that's actually exactly what I thought was, well, what do people see when they come to my blog and how do they feel about it? And I remember somebody that I respect, somebody who follows my blog, saying something like, I really hate it when I go to a blog and I can't see past the ads. That's why I like your blog. And this was sort of before I had decided to put ads in my blog. And I was like, oh boy, I got to really think about this. So, but by the way, I noticed your site is also ad free. So
it is. I could, nice. You know, for various reasons, but mostly the one you said.
It's
like, I think about ads and I go, yuck. Like that's not why the internet was created.
Right. And I think, you know, especially for your site, you have so much information there. You know, there's just so much going on that's so important for people to read. If you really want them to be distracted by, you know, whatever, an ad for something that's completely random. Yeah, that's sort of my feeling.
Right. Well, and also. I totally understand why people have ads, and I think there are certain ads that really make a lot of sense.
Right.
You know, a lot of people who, you know, cook with the Vitamix will have a, you know, a Vitamix with an affiliate code and stuff like that. But in general, I feel like the information that we get about food, nutrition, health, healing is already corrupted by money.
And so
I kind of go out of my way to be independent. So if I want to criticize a company for the food they produce,
good point.
You know, I don't want to have to, you know, go back and remove their ads from or not speak
point.
My mind because you know,
you're beholden somehow. Yeah.
So, you know, I like the idea of being paid by the people that I'm helping.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway.
So, I understand you don't like to talk about yourself or self-promote, but do you like, you know, go on the circuit and give presentations and do cooking demos? Is that something you enjoy?
You know, I haven't. I have my first cooking class coming up in July, and I'm scared to death.
It's in Oklahoma?
It is in Oklahoma, and it's a vegan cheese making class. So I'm going to see how that goes. I decided not to do kind of book signing, that kind of thing, because I don't have those connections, and you know, I didn't want to. I'll just say it right out. It's not me. I had this sort of idea that there I would be sitting in a cavernous bookstore with a pile of books next to me and, you know, the sound of crickets. So, you know, no, it's not really me. But we'll see how this cooking class goes. I mean, I could kind of see doing that locally now and again. I'm working with the Vegetarian Society of Tulsa, and there's some great people involved in that. So that's kind of a nice, it's more like, hey, let's hang out. Let's make some food together and hold a class. So I'm hoping that's sort of the vibe on that.
Cool. Well, you could maybe you could get sponsored by Bragg's and wear a giant like amino acid costume, and then then it would be all about the food.
That's right. Yeah, then I'll have to put a Bragg's ad on my site, right? Well, let me ask you: what do you crave?
Oh well, we could go through.
Do you have something that?
So
you know?
definitely. Like chocolate and sweet.
Yeah.
Like that's the main thing. I mean, sweet and salty.
Yeah.
You know, there was, I don't know if you've ever watched Orange is the New Black.
I have a TV. But
there's a line in there where, you know, she goes to prison and at one point she's like, you know, she knows she's going to go and they get all her favorite foods from Whole Foods, you know, and one of them is like, they call them the crack almonds, like the cocoa dusted sweet almonds with like salt on it. Like,
oh man. Yeah. You know, it's all in there.
But I also, I crave quantity. Like, you know, the mouthfeel of too much food in my mouth. So that's something that, you know, there's no recipe that's going to make that okay.
Right.
You know, well, I'm full, but I think I could eat another half a pound.
I understand that. Yeah. Listening to the body signal, like don't send down any more, but your head goes, gosh, it just tastes so good.
Yeah. Can we just like have a bypass valve somewhere?
Right. I can still chew it, but you know, I can clean my plate, but that's a tough one.
Yeah, but they're all in there, and you know, the better I eat and the slower I go, the less I have, the less hold they have of me, and they get to be when I'm doing well, they get to be conversations. As opposed to, you know, I'm the dog on the chain being yanked by them.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's who's the master, who's in control. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Well, so this has been a delightful conversation, but I need to go make some of these recipes.
I need to go cook. Yeah, I think that we're both hungry over here. You hear my stomach growling over here.
I know. Why in the world did I schedule this for 11 to noon
lunchtime? Right. Exactly. Lunchtime. Exactly. Well, I really appreciate you talking to me today. It's a lot of fun. Nice to get to know you a little bit.
Likewise, I'm so happy that this book exists in the world.
Thank you.
It's got, you know, pride of place on my bookshelf. It's and it's about to get real dirty. So
go for it. Yeah, so get in there.
I hope your photos look good with stains on them.
Sure, just enhances them. Get that liquid amino out, and that gets everywhere, no matter how careful you are. So.
Awesome. Well, Annie Oliverio, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. Your action step for today is to examine a craving of yours and see where it leads you. If you look at it without judgment and without immediately jumping to satisfy it, what does it tell you about deeper longings? About what you really need, about how you can take care of yourself in the moment and in the long term. If you enjoy the Plant Yourself podcast, I'd love your support in helping to spread the word. You can, of course, share it on social media with friends and family. You can email. You could wear sandwich boards, hire planes to do skywriting. But the easiest thing, if you haven't done it yet, is to go to iTunes and leave a review. write something, give it some stars, so other people can find it as well. If you're in the North Carolina area, I still have an open dinner coming up too, actually. One on the 25th of June in Chapel Hill, and one on the 2nd of July in Durham, North Carolina. You can find out more about those and other upcoming events at plantyourself.com/dinners. I've gotten some great feedback, very helpful feedback, on the Oatmeal Project, my first Wee Steps report. If you'd like to check it out, you can find it at plantyourself.com/oatmeal. If you're already a subscriber to the Wellness Weekly newsletter, you'll just put in your name and email and go straight to the download page. If not, you will need to give me your name and email and download it, and then we can stay in touch. And every week, every Tuesday, following the heels of the podcast, I send an email newsletter out with tips, tricks, a link to the podcast, and goodies of all sorts, including the oatmeal report. So it's getting really hot here. It's going to break 100. So wherever you are in the world, whether it's hot or cold today, whether you're indoors or outdoors, my wish to you as always is be well, my friends. Let's take this home with some gratitudes. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Sabali Dawn as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize, all the stuff that I do is for you, so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.